Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Our guest today, Chrissy Fagerl. Chrissy, it's great to have you on. I really appreciate you hopping on with me. Can you tell us where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with EMP Toy and Games?
I am in Denver, Colorado. Awesome. I am a licensed and self-publisher, and my company is EAP Toy and Games. So I self-publish family-friendly party games. So it's a mix of light competition with humor designed for kids, teens, and adults.
That's amazing. And tell me a little bit more about your background. I mean, what got you into this space and wanting to create a brand? And what did you kind of notice out there with the current, market of kids and adult games you were trying to do a little bit differently with EMP?
Well, I have zero background in this space. I went to college and got a degree in communications, and then I spent the next 17 years as a floral designer. In between some of that time, in addition to becoming a parent, I dabbled in other creative things. I knew I wanted to do something that allowed me to be creative. I love humor, connection. What did that look like? So I did greeting cards. I did invitations. I mean, yes, flowers. I worked in bars. A lot of those different things all compiled what I really like. And a lot of that fell into kind of this social aspect and how those things bring people together. And I was some friends and we went to dinner. We all met in Texas. We grew up together. And at this point, we're all adults. And we created this game just for us to kind of enjoy in that moment. And 2 hours later, we were like, this is a really good idea. We should turn this into a game. I mean, ignorance is bliss, because we had no idea what was ahead of us as far as work for something as simple as a 250 question game. We all went to our lives and then we just connected over the phone and we finally were like, okay, what do we do? Let's do this. Let's self-publish this. Let's do a Kickstarter. And that's what we did. But we took almost 2 years just based on our professional lives that we were handling at the same time. Created this game. We launched a Kickstarter. It was successful and the stars aligned, and luck had it that Goliath was looking for a new party game line to start. And we were like, yes, we want to license this idea. So we ended up licensing that idea. My friends kind of went on to do their other things. They're like, oh, that was great. That was fun. We got to do this fun little project. But for me, it kind of just tapped something inside me that was like, I know I have more ideas. It encompasses all the things that I love. What can I continue forward? And in 2021, I was like, all right, I'm just going to self-publish some games, because I realized licensing ideas to companies is really hard. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'm becoming an entrepreneur and not just an inventor, designer, whatever category you want to put me in. But that's really where the trajectory of my career started.
That's amazing. I love that. And so obviously your first project that you did, you licensed it. So that was kind of like an open and close. With the rest of the things that you've published since then, what was kind of your general, strategy going into, creating these new things? Did you start selling them kind of online through social media? Or did you kind of want to like reach out right to retailers and sell them through that venue? What was your kind of general strategy from the beginning once you started publishing your own?
Well, first of all, I stepped into an industry that I knew nothing of. So I fall into two spaces. I fall into the game, and then I fall also into toys, just because my games also are geared towards kids, even though they are designed for anyone to enjoy. The game industry itself is huge, and it separates itself in a few different categories, like strategy. Sometimes you hear that as hobby games, Euro games, party games. And I started in the toy industry. I said, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to focus my business to business, wholesale. I did my first trade show at a toy trade show back in 2022, sold games to stores. And I thought, this is great. Right before I got to that trade show, I signed with a distributor to help me with getting into larger markets. It's a great avenue for people who are doing that, because they have the access, they have the tools to store and to ship and do all these stuff. So that's kind of where I let them take the reins of maybe a little bit more kind of the mid-tier to higher tier retailers. And I focused at the beginning just more specialty, smaller stores. And my distributor also handled my Amazon at the time. I handle it myself now, but they handled it at the time because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I need someone to help me. Yes, it's worth giving someone a percentage of my sales, because I didn't know what I was doing. And that's different, starting my third year now, what I've learned. So yeah, that was my focus the first year. Probably actually the first year and a half was that business-to-business wholesale. And then this year I've really wanted to say, okay, now I need to focus more on a direct direct-to-consumer route.
That's awesome. And what are you kind of employing to kind of drive the more direct-to-consumer side of sales, whether it's Amazon or through your website? What kind of channels are you operating in as far as, like, you know, driving traffic to either one of those channels?
So this last year, I took over my Amazon account for a few reasons. It was, I realized if I could have more control over that, I could have more control over the marketing, where it's coming from, where my dollars are going. I could see the back end. And every day I kick myself for that because it's Amazon's, it's intense. But I have implored people to help me with that and just kind of guide me in some of like the advertising costs and where you put your money and the keywords and the SEO. And it's been interesting kind of just seeing how, what takes and what doesn't take. I realized with my original website that I needed to upgrade that to Shopify because Shopify connects more to the social media accounts. And if I'm going to be investing money in marketing on social media, then I needed to have a Shopify account. So now I'm in the process of that so that when I'm putting my dollars into my marketing, it can funnel either straight to my website, which can take them to Amazon. It can funnel them directly to Amazon. And I've played a little bit. I've been very conservative because it's not like you just put $100 on or $1,000 or $10,000 into an ad and it's just going to work and you're just going to sell. There's a lot that kind of goes into intricacies of, again, keywords, SEO, your target market. And I'm just slowly figuring that out and having companies who are, that's what they do, help me because I know that it's not my current strength.
Yeah, it's extremely time consuming, believe me, I know. And especially with Amazon and then on socials to begin with, I mean, they're just ever changing landscapes. It's kind of like the Wild West, especially on social media. I mean, have you took into, I know one of like the most recent advents of selling through social media, obviously, is like TikTok Shop. Have you looked into that at all? Is that something you're interested in doing or?
So I just started looking into TikTok Shop. I have some friends of mine in the industry who have also just started dabbling into it, especially on the game side. My current attention, and I think my target market right now, while I figure that out, is not necessarily my buyer is not on TikTok yet for me to really throw all my attention and dollars first there. I was like, I need to migrate my website and then I need to test kind of like Instagram and Facebook, of course, and then play around with a little bit of TikTok on the side. So I knew that instead of putting all my attention to every single social media, I needed to funnel that first and then kind of step forward. And then of course, now we have the issue of TikTok going on. It's like, is it closing? Is it not closing? What's happening? So I'm learning from my peers and what's working and what's not working. So it's been interesting. And I've heard it's a little hard to pick up, but I think once you get it, TikTok clearly is selling a lot. And I know a lot of people who buy from TikTok Shop. So it's just a matter of me knowing my limits and just really focusing on one rather than kind of spreading myself thin.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a very nuanced perspective. I mean, a lot of feedback that I get from people who come on the podcast when I ask some questions, like, you know, if you could go back, like thinking about your marketing or everything you've learned up to this point, like what would you do differently if you could go back? And no matter what it is, I think people can just kind of spread themselves too thin and just kind of like not enough eggs in one basket, but like just a little bit like all over the place. So it's definitely something I hear as like a common experience from others. So I think you have a great perspective on that. And when you talk about, you know, spending marketing dollars on social media, what's your general strategy there? I mean, you're working with like any like influencers or anything like that? Or are you just running kind of like paid advertising on socials? What does that kind of look like for the brand?
Yeah, I've not worked with influencers quite yet. It's in my current plan as I try to grow my sales as far as direct to consumer. I've always played it very conservatively. If I've ever done a paid social ad or if I've put money into my marketing on Amazon, reason being, obviously there's 500,000 games on Amazon, right? And for me to buy the keyword games or party games, I'm competing with companies that can spend tens to hundreds of thousand dollars for that keyword. So we have been very conservative and going a little lower to try to see like what words are working with my product. Is it, am I comparing it with another product that's out there? Am I taking keywords from the games itself? Am I slowly building this little kind of category of items that we are seeing produce things? And some do and some don't. And like you said, it's a changing platform every day. So we just feel like we're like chasing to figure out what works. And most of the time it's money. Most of the time, instead of putting in $1, you have to put in $100 or you have to spend $100 a day on advertising. And the unfortunate thing is there's no guarantee that's going to sell. So it's interesting and it's terrifying. But I'm hoping by, like for us, like our season really is this Q4, you know what I mean? I'm still pretty early new company as far as just being 2 years in and really only having a focus on Amazon for the last year. I'm still learning. I'm still trying to kind of figure it out.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I love that. And it's interesting you say it's very seasonal. I would not think that from the outside looking in. But do you find that, like, you know, your sales generally ramp up on the D2C side, like in Q4, like through the wintertime?
Yes, for sure. And especially for someone at my level, I can't speak for, you know, like the Hasbros and Mattels or even companies that are self-publishing but have really successful games, they're selling a lot every day, but they definitely will see that bump. With most companies, they'll see that bump in that fourth quarter. So I'm trying to do all those things now so that when I get to that point, I am like, my back end is good. My inventory is good. My QuickBooks is good. My website is solid. I'm not kind of worrying about that. And then my only focus is on sales and marketing.
Mm-hmm. No, that definitely makes sense. And I'm curious too, like when you think about your ideal customer, I know you said you make games like anywhere from kids to teens to adults. When you say that, do you mean that your games are kind of like fluid in that way? Or are you saying like you have different games that kind of like pique in interest for each one of those individual groups? Yeah. And I'm just curious like what you meant by that first.
So all three games that I currently self-publish that are in the market are designed for an audience of 8 and up. With that being said, I am a person who likes to play games and have fun, especially with my children. And when my kids were younger, there's this, you know, you kind of get in this glut of you're playing with your kids, but you're almost like blindly playing. Like if you're playing Candyland, you're just kind of just playing. And I was like, I want to make games that are fun for me to play as well, but then can be played with just kids or just adults. So all three games that I currently have are 5 rules or less, because I thought my market is the person who thinks they don't like to play games because they just don't want to learn it. I don't know if you're a game person or not, but like,
oh, even, I am.
Yeah. Okay. So even for me, learning even like a small light strategy game, but the second I'm taken out of that, I'm like, it's intimidating and it takes a long time and you have to have patience. And that's not a majority of the people. So I realize like I'm trying to make games for people that say they don't really want to play or they think they're not going to have fun, but they're quick to learn, but can be enjoyed by a wide variety of people. So for instance, my last game that I put out is this lighthearted betting game. It is for an audience of 8 and up, but you know, I brought it to a bar and I've had adults play it while they're drinking and leave it to drinking adults to turn an innocent party game into an adult party game. It's hilarious. So that's just easy, fun, quick kind of connection that I can make easily. Now, as far as like adult party games, and you know, that's a whole, like my first one is an adult party game. I still pitch to companies for licensing. I've just licensed another one for an adult party game. It's a different market. So it's kind of like, is my marketing strategy different if I have a game that is just for 18 and up? So I kind of play that a little bit. As I design, my next game that I've been working on is more kind of in a 12 to 14 age range, because I'm trying to push myself as a designer to, you know, make something a little bit more thinky, make something that has a few more rules, but is still very easy to learn and fun at the same time without torturing someone while trying to teach them how to play, which is, if you like games, you know, it's hard.
I've definitely been there. A lot of my friends like these like very, very intricate, like storyboard strategic games, which like they're fun, but like I can only do one every so often. It's like once I take the time to learn, like I want to play it. I want to get good at it. I don't want to just like, it takes me a week to learn the rules and then we start playing and then we move on to something else. It's like, why? Yeah. It's like, it's so frustrating.
I know. I know. My very first trade show in the gaming world, I was blown away. I mean, clearly I had an idea of like some popular, more easy strategy games, but some of these, first of all, the artwork is insane in a good way. The rule books, like writing rules for a game that has 5 rules is hard enough. I can't imagine what it takes to kind of build out those booklets and this world and these characters and the story. But these board games are huge and the pieces, it's just like mind blowing. And then I'm over there like, hi, I have a squishy tater tot. You want to?
But I love that.
The joke, but I finally realized, you know, when I was in these gaming trade shows, I, you know, my stuff is bright and it's colorful and it's friendly and it's da-da-da. And then I'd be next to someone who it's like this dark underworld with, you know, dragons and all these things. And I would joke them like, hey, you know, like I'm just the gateway game to these. Like you got to start these kids somewhere, right?
Yeah, right.
let's start with light competition and then they can work their way up.
That's amazing. I love that. And I think that's a really good way to look at it. And that definitely is something a little bit different because I feel like anything new that's coming out these days is trying to almost be in that space, it seems, where, you know, trying to compete with like the most intricate and like almost like impressive games. It's like it's almost like a fantasy video game and a board game. And it's like, I'm not always looking for that all the time, especially if you have like, you know, younger kids. I mean, you're never going to get that across to like, you know, an 8 or 10 year old. Like the attention span is just not there to stick around for something and it's like even that. Like,
or, you know, like those heavy games, it's like, you know, consider these party games like a palate cleanser, right? So it's so funny because like the game trade shows and the toy trade shows are so different. But I love the intensity of the game shows because people are hardcore, right? Like they are really into all aspects of it. Up, down, you know, like Gen Con, like I hope to get there sooner than later, just even as a person who's going to just check it out. Like the cosplay and the storytelling, and there's just like this big world when you've never been there, and then you finally step into it, you're like, it's awesome, you know what I mean? But it's intimidating, you know what I mean? And it's like when you're starting out in this party game, you kind of do feel this intimidation of like, you know, am I being judged because my games are these simple and I'm a mom, you know what I mean? Like it's, I come at it from a completely different lens, but I can appreciate what they're doing with their craft. And I hope those tables are turned that they're like, okay, so maybe you're not into, you know, like heavy stuff. That's okay. You know, we can appreciate just making this lighthearted, silly game. Party games have like this funny, like some of them can be really physical and some people are turned off by that or they don't want to embarrass themselves. And, you know, then there's this kind of audience that wants that too. You know what I mean? So it's just finding that balance in the party game space to be like, when you can do a party game that's accepted by that full genre of the hobby, like you've nailed it, right? But it would be hard for me to sit down and even play Dungeons and Dragons, like just not my cup of tea, you know?
Yeah. Oh no, that is one of the, like, to find a, I definitely ran some dungeons in my lifetime and it's a really glorious pastime for a lot of people. And it is, there is a devout following of games like that. I feel like what you're seeing at those, like, you know, at those big conventions where there's a lot of like cosplay and stuff going on, people just absolutely love it. It just becomes like, it's a lifestyle for a lot of people. Yeah. It really is. And it's amazing and it's impressive. And, but I think there's definitely room there for appreciation for something that isn't like extremely intricate. That's just like a fun party game that people can easily understand. I mean, I can see how that's very intimidating. I'm more of a video gamer, but I mean, like, you know, the big video game convention is the same thing. It's like endless cosplay.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you come in like talking about like these, like, it's almost like you talk about like the most popular games. People are like, oh, you're just like a normal person gamer. Like you're not in the circle kind of feel, you know what I mean?
So
I know exactly how you feel almost in that way. Like not because I make games or anything, but just because like I've been to those places and I know that people can be a little bit off-putting for, you know, something that's not like strictly within their circle and their like, you know, side of the world in that genre. I definitely see that. And
I was gonna say, it can be very intimidating for anyone who just like stepped into this. Like they've created a game and they go into this and they're like, what? You know what I mean? It's just, but clearly it's an industry. There's money to be made. There's things to be sold. There's things, you know, so
And I want to ask you too, as far as the other side of your business with the licensing games that you've made, it's both have been adult games, it sounds like. How does somebody get into a conversation with somebody to like, say like you come up with a game idea, maybe like a newer entrepreneur listening who's interested, maybe in doing licensing, not necessarily doing like a, you know, a venture project. How do you get your foot in the door with like having a conversation with somebody who might be interested in licensing something, whether it's a game or, I mean, honestly, anything. I don't necessarily get to have these conversations with, you know, like licensing deals often, because most people that come on the podcast, we talk about their venture brands and their venture projects. So I'm curious to hear your perspective on that. I mean, is that something that's like very available for people to do if they think they have an idea and have put a lot of time and effort into it and they really believe in what they're doing? I mean, how do you like get your foot in the door in those conversations?
Yeah, there's a couple of different routes. Like I said, with our first one, it all kind of just fell together. And at the time that was 2017. And when we did our Kickstarter is even just in 2024 is much different than it was in 2017. And it was different than it was when it first started. That's a huge space for board game creators to go and get their word out. There's a huge following. There is like, it's massive. It's also showing to these companies before investing in your product that, oh yes, you sold this. And what did you sell? How much did you sell? What's that success look like? So they've already kind of erased a little bit of that gamble and said, oh, they, you know, and our goal was $25,000, which is big, or it was big for the time. And that, as far as connections go, when we started, we would go to, there's this thing at the time was called People of Play, and it is a toy and game industry event where we got this opportunity to do like speed pitch. We met a couple of different publishers that were interested in our game at the time, and it looked different. The play was the same, but it looked different. Like, I'm actually really embarrassed that that's what we showed. So we left there going, okay, let's do the Kickstarter. Let's try this and let's prove to them that we can get this kickstarted. Then we had talks and we kind of went back and forth with a couple of companies. One of my partners in the game had a connection and, you know, pull out all the connections, right? If you know somebody in the industry. And we were like, all right, we have this game. Yes, they put us in the right hands at Goliath. And then we talked with the other companies we met in Chicago. We proved that we had this Kickstarter at work. And because Goliath was building their line, you know, it was the perfect setting. Now, we just thought that's something that, oh, okay, great. Now that means this is easy, right? When I went into it, when I went on myself, I was like, oh, I'm going to pitch these companies. I joined this, it's called the Toy Creators Academy, because I never went to school and I needed to figure out some of the back end of this stuff. And Ajel, who is the coach of that, she does these little pitch, not competitions, but she gives these opportunities where she pulls some different publishers. And I was able to pitch via Zoom. And, you know, you make these videos that show like what the game is, how it's played, people enjoying it. And I kind of opened a few doors there. It didn't mean that people were taking the ideas. They liked them. They liked the sizzle. I assumed they liked me. And that allowed me to be like, okay, this is great. It's not a fit for us, but we would still like to see what are you coming up with in the future. So I was like, great. That's a route to go. Going to trade shows, even just as a consumer and introducing yourself, you know, kind of doing, this is a little more uncomfortable for a lot of people, is, you know, finding the right people, introducing yourself to people at trade shows. Like, hey, you know, I'm actually looking into getting into game design. I would like to pitch this idea to somebody, and hopefully you get that opportunity. So network, network, network when you go to these events. You never know who knows who there. There's places like Mojo, who is, they're based in the UK, and they hold pitching events too, which are really great. They hear so many ideas and they pitch so much. So you just have to be prepared. Have an idea, have your sizzle, have your sell sheet, have the game at least to where you think you can sell that idea. And that's really it. There's a lot of different avenues you can take. And then even if they don't take your idea, if you're showing them something good, then they feel you have potential, then you've kind of opened that opportunity for further chances to pitch.
I appreciate that insight. And I mean, even further than, there's a lot of avenues to go. Like, there's a lot of avenues you should be taking advantage of, it sounds like, which is like, you know, you can't just pick one and just like hammer at it until it works. I mean, there's trade shows, there's coaching systems, there's networks, people out there. I mean, LinkedIn exists. Like, there is millions of people out there that, like you, I'm sure, are like willing to connect and do and network and things. And believe me, like, you know, reaching out to people to even just to do this podcast, the willingness of people with these kind of growing brands with real like whys behind they make these things. I mean, they're very much willing to help and network. And I think it's really important for people to know is, you know, if you're trying to do something, whether it's a venture project or whether you're looking to get something licensed, I mean, you have to take advantage of all the avenues that are out there, because you never know where it's going to hit. Even going through those processes, even if it's not successful, like you said, it just helps you along the way to an eventual point where you find something that does work. You're more refined. You have all your things behind you. I really appreciate that. I don't get to talk about, you know, those types of processes enough, I don't think, on the pod. I would like to more. So I appreciate you helping me be a part of that.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I mean, the more you do something, the better you are. If I think about when I first started pitching, it was like, I thought I had to be very rote and like have these PowerPoints and all this stuff. And I realized that's not how I operate. I was like, I have to let this go and just do what I'm good at. And that I just got better at that every time I had the opportunity to pitch. It's even going to a trade show. If I'm trying to even pitch to a retailer, like, this is where waiting tables worked for me growing up. Like, I...
Same.
Right? You realize, like, this person wants to be talked to. I know how to sell this person. I know this person wants to chat. I know that I can pick up on like a personal thing that they did or said or cue or whatever and kind of run with that. You know, is this person more interested in the packaging, or are they more interested in the mechanics? And that's kind of what separates the toy world from the game world. In the game world, they want to know how that game is played. They want mechanics, because they're going to, if put it in their shop, that game's going to be out. They want to be able to explain it. In the toy space, it's a little bit harder, because it's more about, do they already know the game? How does this look on shelf? How am I separating myself from all the other products that a family gets to choose from? So, you know, it's like this different balance of like, I really need to focus on packaging, really from like a marketing, mass marketing aspect. And really, hopefully my games are fun and playable and, you know, from the game side. So it's just like a little bit of a balancing act there.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that. It's so, so interesting, just like, you know, hearing that side of things, because, you know, I hear so much obviously about, you know, different marketing channels and revenue streams and like, you know, working with distributors versus like, you know, if you're in the food space, like a distributor, what's a distributor versus a co-packer and all these different things, different strategies and different avenues you can go down and things like that. So, but I really appreciate you sharing that. It's a really interesting way to, for an entrepreneur, maybe, you know, isn't interested in getting involved in the venture project. Maybe they don't want to leave their job, but they still have a passion project that they're looking to, you know, get in the hands of somebody who can do something with it. I think licensing is a very viable option for a lot of people who have great ideas, but I don't think is in popular sentiment when you think about starting a business or, you know, like making money off of an idea. I don't think a lot of people think about going down that route. So I think it's really important that people understand the opportunities out there.
And I've had a lot of conversations recently with people who A, do one or the other or both. So I do both. And having that insight has been interesting, because it's like, there's pros and cons to both sides.
Right.
And just because you license something, there's no guarantee that there's a success there. There's no guarantee that you're going to make a ton or a lot of money, you know, and then you look on the self-publishing side, and some people think, oh, well, you have to make more money self-publishing. I'm like, well, for me and where I'm at personally, I'm at that stage where everything I make is also going back into the company.
Right.
So I am like, well, yes and no. I know really successful self-publishers. I know people who are really successful in licensing. To be successful successful in licensing, it's a couple things. You either have an evergreen product that just hits, which is great because then you're just making money on an idea that you made and you have to do nothing else with it. Or you've licensed a lot of ideas. Some licensing, I can honestly only speak for the game space, is you may only make a little bit of money, but if you have a little bit of money coming from five different ideas, that's great. But then you're that's you being an inventor. You're kind of constantly coming up with ideas, which is awesome because that's kind of how we all got started into this process anyways. And then with self-publishing, if you are good at business, no matter whether that's kind of, you know, you went to school for business or not, the school hard knocks, it takes a different sort of hustle. You know, it takes, like, I don't like the back end of understanding my QuickBooks, but I have to, you know, like, that's not the fun part, but it's a part of it. And then when I can step away, when I'm getting frustrated, I'm like, ah, that's it. I have to work on ideas. That kind of refreshes my brain going, oh, this is why I'm doing this. I had to give myself the own opportunity because licensing was really not giving me that what I wanted. I was like, oh, I'm just going to go in there and pitch all these deals and their ideas and they're going to take them. No, because like if I'm pitching one person, they've heard 1,000 ideas already this year. I really have to stand out. What is giving them, why do they want to take the risk on me and my idea and invest their dollars into my product?
Yep.
And that takes forever too. Like then you have to wait for it just to get hit shelf. And hopefully it hits shelf and it does well.
No, that's awesome. I really appreciate your insights, Christine. I just want to say thank you again for coming on. Yeah, and I just want to give you a quick opportunity just to, you know, shout out your website, your social media pages, anywhere if anybody listens to the podcast may be interested in potentially partnering with you on the business side of things, or anybody just wants to, you know, buy one of your games. Yeah, let everybody know how to stay in touch with you guys. Yeah.
So on all socials, I'm at EAP Toy and Games. You can find me on Amazon at EAP Toy and Games, and my website is eaptoyandgames.com, where that will connect you to all my socials and anywhere you can buy the games, which is Amazon, Mass, and of course, if there's a specialty store near you, I would love you to shop local and support small shops. So
awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you again, Christy. I wish you the best of luck, continued success in what you're doing. I love what you're doing. The games are awesome. I love your passion for what you're doing, bringing people together. So it's amazing. Yeah. Thank you again, Christy.
It's been fun talking to you. Thanks so much.
You too. Thanks, everybody.